What do you think? Is the dream of winning a Super Bowl dead without major changes around here, Cowboys fans? That's what a former NFL president had to say. The Franklin Frankel Injury Attorney text line is open for you at 877-881-1053. Third hour of the Nation. We're going all the way until 7 o'clock tonight. And then you'll get some sort of configuration with the Fan After Dark. But Blake was in with Medford today, filling in for KMC, who's out sick.
I think it's Fred and C.A.
Fred and C.A.
The three-time Hall of Famer.
Looking forward to that. 7 to 11 here on 105.3 The Fan. Brian?
Fred and Blake were huge helps.
Yes, yeah, salute us. To them.
You know, yeah. they came in early and did some stuff with us. And Will Chambers was also a huge help. So those guys are listening. Thanks very much for giving Eric and I assistance for the G-Bag Nation. We really appreciate you, man.
Yeah, and salute to you guys for holding it down so well. Yeah. You know, and over week and a half, as Wolchuk and I were enjoying some holiday greatness, I was up there in the mountains of Oregon. The snow cooperated perfectly. We got lots of it. You know, white Christmas. It started coming down on Christmas Day.
Wow, that's man. Awesome.
And it didn't really relent. Yesterday, as we were pulling out, there was a fresh 3 or 4 inches of snow on the ground. Mom said, "I'm not taking you to the airport because, you know, the roads were so hectic." Mm. So we got a driver there, and everything was perfect, but man, it's something else when you get up there in the mountains and you get to enjoy that kind of Christmas. I would highly recommend the Bend, Oregon area for anybody that's looking for a winter destination. Still not too crowded, although it's become quite popular. Okay, you're looking at you probably worked with this guy, didn't you, Brian? Joe Banner?
I did. I was with him in Philly.
Okay. So it'd be interesting, you know,
he hates the Cowboys.
Yeah, he was reacting to Ed Werder's tweet about it. Where he was talking that, you know, McCarthy forced Kellen Moore's departure because he convinced Jerry that he should be the play caller. I think Zimmer remains a quality DC, hard to be effective with so many edge players and corners injured. Joe came over the top and said Eagles head coach and coordinators contribute way more to winning. He said, "I have a lot of respect for you, Ed, but Jerry's dream of winning a Super Bowl is dead without major changes. Look at the top teams, head coaches and coordinators. Almost all are better than Dallas. Kansas City, Detroit, Bills, Ravens, Vikings, Eagles, all much better," he says. You know, I don't necessarily agree with that. You know, I don't think this coaching staff is, you know, the best by any stretch of the imagination, but I think they do a very sufficient job. And, you know, after winning as many games as they've had, after coming back after all of these injuries this year and still having a shot at 500, if you didn't have AO make the special teams play, you might be playing, you know, to be 9-8 right now. So I think you can't be bad at your job and do that. So that's funny. I disagree with the specifics of how Joe is laying this out, but I do think the level of difficulty for the Cowboys is significantly higher. You know, I don't think their probabilities are worse than, say, the Giants or the Raiders. You guys could probably help me out with some absolutely horrible teams that we've seen.
Yeah, Browns, Jets,
Dolphins.
Seems like things just can't go right.
Dolphins.
But they're in like the bottom third, I would say, of Super Bowl probability. And it's going to take, you know, some really fortunate, you know, either injury luck, draft luck, you know, a ball bouncing a couple of times in a game, special teams plays in the playoff run. I mean, I think they're the way that they team build does make it more difficult than it needs to be, but I wouldn't call it dead by any stretch of the imagination. What do you guys think?
I mean, it's honestly, it's hard to disagree when you're talking about the ultimate getting to a Super Bowl, winning a Super Bowl. It's hard to feel like that they are in any way heading in that direction. I just don't think it's a priority for them. So I do think they are just as far as all those bottom of the barrel franchises in the sport. They're obviously better than them in a multitude of ways when it comes to winning regular season games and being able to get to the playoffs, but they are just as far away from actually winning a Super Bowl as all of those teams are.
Yeah, what's frustrating is, I guess you just look at, I mean, now you're 30 years removed from an NFC Championship game appearance. And you would at one time, and maybe, you know, I'd still like to think of the Cowboys as like the premier team in the NFL. And you look at the other teams in the other sports, like the Lakers, the Celtics, you think in the NBA. They've won championships. They've been back to the finals in those runs, right? The Yankees in Major League Baseball, they haven't won a World Series since 2009, but they were just in a World Series. Like, for this amount of time, three decades, an entire generation of Cowboy fans, myself at 33 years old, that really can't recollect and remember watching them play just for an NFC championship game, let alone a Super Bowl. It does kind of feel as though the dream is dead. It is very, very hard for me to find any type of optimism with the way that they go about doing things. I mean, the list of, like, the offensive and defensive coordinators, when's this team ever on the forefront of, like, trying to do something creative or fun? And, Brian, you've always stressed, like, well, like, why aren't they the team that does this?
Yeah.
Like, the owner slash general manager and Steven and anyone else you want to throw out, like, they're not at risk of losing their jobs. Right. Like, Jerry just went on Sean and RJ earlier this week and talked about how, yeah, he kind of likes doing the short-term contracts. He doesn't feel like the one-year deal for the head coaches or the coaching staff had any negative impact because he's seen sometimes that makes these guys work harder. Like, sometimes it ends up being a benefit. Mm. Jerry never puts that stipulation on himself. Right. Has Jerry ever sat down and said, like, you know what, if we don't get it done by 2025, I'm firing myself? No, that's never going to happen. And until something drastically changes, 30 years is too long of a sample size to say that this thing is going to get figured out.
You know, I would think, though, the bigger factor in them not winning it is just them settling for slightly above average quarterback play. And that can be shots fired at Dak Prescott or Tony Romo.
That's fair.
You know, who wins them? It's Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes, you know. You got some Peyton Manning in there. You know, every now and then you have an outlier, and usually it's an outlier with an unbelievable roster or a great coach, as, you know, is the case with Sean McVay. You know, but I just don't see a lot of, like, different names popping up here and getting the job done usually. And, you know, that's why I think by far the biggest mistake has been, you know, sticking with quarterbacks who aren't clear Hall of Fame players.
Well, yeah, and sticking with coaches that aren't difference makers. You gave Jason Garrett 9 years. We were firing him after four. We all knew this was not going to cut it. And we're in the similar boat right now with Mike McCarthy. And they all are working from a huge disadvantage. And I don't know if there's anybody on the planet that can overcome the things that the Cowboys present to you as a coach that you're going to have to overcome in order to get to where you want to go. There's a tug of war with priority here. And so being able to revamp the culture and make this a winning franchise that has different type of aspirations to actually get to the Super Bowl, that is the ultimate challenge. Any coach that has this is in a world of trouble with trying to establish what he wants with the difference in priority with the front office.
It's so much to juggle. It's going to take, like, a rare breed of person, rare individual that can come in here, because you're going to have to also realize, as the head coach, I have to almost sacrifice, like, work and do what you want to do, but also try and make my boss feel like ultimately the success is because of you. Because that's what this comes down to. This is Jerry wanting all the recognition and the success. That's what it is. When they win their Super Bowl, he wants to say, I did it. We did it my way. I did it. Right. But now, after 30 years, if you're going to hire that coach that finally is able to break through is going to get the shine. Ultimately, it's going to take a special person to be able to balance the, well, I don't care that I'm sitting here and giving a presser. Jerry's talking the same time I'm talking. I got three people here that I'm talking to. Oh, well, do the players still have to buy? I'm the ultimate decision maker. Is it me or is it the owner and GM? I've got to figure out a way to navigate all of these waters, plus the circus of the constant distractions that come with being the biggest brand in the world when it comes to sports. There's a lot you've got to navigate and maneuver.
There
and
is a lot.
It takes a special person.
And I think he does a tremendous amount of that really, really well. You know, I there is a part of what he doesn't do that's very frustrating because the offense isn't optimized. But, I mean, first, fourth, and second the last 3 years with an offensive line in transition, you know, with really one good wide receiver in CeeDee Lamb. Brandon Cook's okay. Michael Gallup was falling apart. You had nobody else. You had Dalton Schultz and Jake Ferguson as tight ends. Nothing against those guys, like, kind of Pro Bowl-ish, you know? And maybe Dalton Schultz is better than what I give him credit for. But, I mean, you were generating a lot of offense, a lot of points per game with Dak Prescott as your quarterback. A non-running Dak the whole time.
But never when you went up against a real opponent. Never. I mean, they can help their cause with the big picture numbers by just tearing up bad teams. But they, as soon as you put them in a postseason-type atmosphere, whether it's a home game or on the road, a true playoff-quality team,
yeah,
they don't even stand a chance in the games. It's deer in the headlights. You go to Buffalo, a beautiful day in November. The weather gods were smiling down on you that day. It's sunshine. You didn't get the blizzard. And you get embarrassed from the start.
There's a lot of like teams that feast on bad football teams regular season. But you did it the best for 3 years.
Yes, but then do you always also get embarrassed by the top teams? Or do you at least, are you in the fight? Is the game in the balance in the fourth quarter? God, can you just be down single digits at halftime instead of multiple scores?
Well, that's
the huge problem. The gap between where they are versus the bad teams and then where they are when you get a quality opponent. Yes, they had a playoff win versus Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. That was an 8-win football team.
They beat the Lions late last year. I mean, there's a smattering of them.
There's the blue moon moment. There's the blue moon moment. But by and large, you up against a quality opponent who's actually going to be in the postseason and winning their division, not just because they're the Bucs and they're 8 wins and they're playing with the Saints and the Panthers and the Falcons. When you go up against a real playoff opponent, for the most part, since McCarthy's been here, you get smacked.
I mean, I know this is not Dak Prescott, Ledger. It's Cooper Rush, but I mean, you beat them a couple years back. They were coming off a Super Bowl, you know? You beat the Turds annually. You've beaten the Eagles at least once.
Divisional opponent.
The playoffs. It's all about the playoffs. And Mike McCarthy. And
okay, so to my point, that's where the best quarterbacks win, right?
Usually, right?
Or who's got the deer in the headlights look? It's not Mike.
No, yeah, but it's also like Mike's an offensive coach, right? And the 2 years where they were in it against San Francisco, the offense let them down. Like, your defense gave up, I think it was 24 points, then what was it, 19 against an offense that we look at Mike Shanahan, and he's one of the best offensive coaches in the league. Like, that's pretty damn good. You had a chance in the fourth quarter to go win it. And yes, that's fault on the quarterback and Dak Prescott, 100%. But it's also fault on your head coach, who is an offensive guy, in Mike McCarthy. Like, figure out a game plan to score more than 24 points.
And I would just say, I think the regular season with 16 or 17 games is a better judge over the course of 50 games than one playoff game.
But it's all about the playoffs.
It is.
That's the standard. Yeah. And you were brought here to finally get this team over the divisional round. But Garrett couldn't do it. You can't do it.
Is that the best objective scientific way to answer that question, though? Well, it's all about the playoffs.
It should be. The standard should be championships. And now we're just okay with, can you get 2 playoff wins? And that's a sad state to be in as a Cowboy fan.
Well, I would just say I think Mike McCarthy's better at his job than Dak is at his. You know,
hey, he's got a championship. Dak hasn't sniffed one.
This all does come back to Jerry Jones, right?
Yes.
And his decision to ride with a guy that can just make the playoffs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And maybe he looks at, you know, the coaching staff the same way. I don't know if you could come up with the right coach that under these circumstances, Mike McCarthy has been in to win.
Totally,
man,
agree.
I was having a hard time coming up with that guy because in the history of this organization, they've only had 3 really difference maker head coaches, I think. Tom Landry, Jimmy Johnson, and Bill Parcells.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody else has pretty much just been, you know, pretty solid, dependable. Some of them not very good. You know, I was part of the Dave Campbell administration. We weren't very good, but yeah, the hiring of a difference making head coach and Joe Banner got rid of Andy Reid, so he got rid of Andy Reid had been in Philadelphia for 14 years, probably hearing a lot of the same things that Mike McCarthy, you know, that we'll talk about with Mike.
So Roseman kind of took over for Banner,
yeah.
As far as the main decision maker.
Yeah, they moved on from
got better without him.
Well, yeah, that's what happened. Joe was like the president of the club, and they said, "Now we're moving on from you." But I don't know if this organization is capable of hiring a difference maker head coach.
Yeah,
and I don't know, to be honest with you, if there is a difference maker head coach out there, and maybe he's at North Carolina right now. Maybe that's the one guy but I don't know if Ben Johnson is a difference making head coach.
I'd sure like to find out.
Yeah, though. I would too. I mean, we didn't know if Matt LaFleur were. We didn't know if Sean McVay was.
Sure.
We didn't know if Kevin O'Connell was. These guys are all looking great. They got to get their first chance.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a little bit of a fear and trepidation of, I got to have skins on the wall with my head coach here.
Yeah.
We don't want to attempt and see, is this young guy that innovative dude? And you can throw, I mean, I know we've talked about the Jason Witten stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be outside the box, but give me a guy who's been in the NFL and at least has earned that opportunity so far.
See, would you consider Garrett the first time head coach?
Yeah, he was. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. See, I mean, he has given, but it wasn't a difference making coach.
No. And did any of us really think that he was?
No.
And the reason Jerry was comfortable with giving him the job is because he'd been in the building for so long. But yeah. You know, I think Blake made a great point earlier today. They were doing like New Year's resolutions for DFW sports, and his for the Cowboys was don't be afraid of failure. Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, going with a coach who's got a track record, you kind of feel like he's going to limit our downside, where if you're taking a swing on a first time head coach, it can blow up in all sorts of ways. And Right. Geniuses can look like idiots in 6 months.
Right.
So, you know, but that would be, you know, I think a surprising development if we found out the Cowboys were scouring coaching staffs looking for the next great guy who's got a chance. They'll find somebody who's got a Super Bowl on their resume and, you know, can guide you through. Maybe. Okay.
His playoff win drought's not much smaller than yours. I think he's like 25 years or something since he's won a playoff game.
Mm. Wow. Okay, Wolchuk, we do have Eric Kendricks on the schedule. Do we have any update on that? Are we going to the top 10 next? What do you think?
Well, we're looking at probably around 4:30-ish for Kendricks. It could be earlier. I'll try and get an update during the break. If we do the top 10, it is National Buffet Day. I know last year we did like the top 10 things to see on a buffet, but what's the best type of buffet? What gets you most excited? Buffets next.
All right, Eric Kendricks is still going through a walkthrough at today's practice, so we're going to jump into the top 10 at 4:20 here with the Woolly Bully. And we'll get Eric Kendricks on before too long. Segment is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. It's brought to you by Ciroc Vodka. And it's brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one is injured in a car truck wreck, call the Frankels. Get a free consultation. 214 or 817-333-3333. Go online to frankelfirm.com. Here he is, Zach with an H. Your Woolly Bully.
Who doesn't love a good buffet? 877-881-1053. National Buffet Day. Where is your favorite buffet, and what is your favorite type of buffet? Ooh. But we do need to address the quarterfinal playoff game that's going on right now. We're tied at 3 between Georgia and Notre Dame. But we got this kid, Parker Jones, number 39 on Georgia. He's listed as a cornerback, 5'11", 190 from Albany, Georgia, redshirt sophomore.
He's not even dressed, is he?
He's wearing his jersey, but no pads, like not playing in the game. Mm. And first down and 10 to start the second quarter. Georgia hits a 66-yard pass down the sideline, Gunnar Stockton, to Arian Smith. And it gets called back because of sideline interference. And this kid, Parker Jones, was a little too much on the white line there. And the official ends up running into him, flags thrown. So now he is the certain headline on social media as everyone's like, man, he's looking at which fraternity he's going to rush next year. He's about to be kicked off the team. But Parker Jones, if Georgia does not win this football game, is going to be public enemy number one.
Steve Bartman?
Yes.
Yeah, he's trending.
He's getting
on
the Bartman treatment.
There on the Georgia Bulldog like website when you're going to try and like look at the roster. It got bogged down because everybody was rapidly trying to figure out who this guy was. And so they basically didn't have enough bandwidth to to cover for it. Mm. So, yeah, this kid's trending in a huge way right now.
Trending towards the transfer portal, if you ask me.
Yeah, he's probably not
looking to get out at halftime.
Not going to have, maybe.
What if he was the same kid that, remember we did the story about after the Mississippi beat him? And that Georgia player was celebrating with the Ole Miss
guy. Yeah. Same kid. That'd be great.
God.
I don't think it is, but my gosh. I know it was a defensive back that was doing it, so maybe it was.
Can't rule it out.
I don't think it was the same kid. But
I can't rule it out.
How crazy would that be?
That would be nuts. He was a little too excited, this kid was, on the sideline. Like, he actually wanted Georgia to win.
Yeah.
That day, he seemed a little bit happy they lost, celebrating with his buddy. All right, we got less than 5 minutes, and we'll chat with our buddy Eric Kendrick. So I can dive into the list, or I can just vamp with some other items, and we can save it for the next segment, or whatever you'd like to do here.
You know, I thought there were some interesting stories that we didn't get to there during the C-note.
Let's do it.
Because of how that coaching a conversation took off. And then we'll get to the top 10 coming up at 4:40, 4:45, somewhere in there. Jordan Lewis discussing his upcoming free agency. This is from Blogging the Boys. They made a story around that along with Steve's quote with us saying Jordan is just an uber competitor. He's a guy who's out of contract and obviously a guy we want to have back on this football team. That was Steven Jones here on 105.3 The Fan. Jordan asked if, you know, he wants to continue with the Cowboys. He said, always, Dallas is my home. My kids were born here. We'd love to have another season here or a few seasons here. My wife loves it, but I know it's a business. You know, I think with the Trayvon Diggs injury, doesn't this just become like, if you don't draft Jordan Lewis, if you don't sign Jordan Lewis, you're going to have to draft somebody in the first two rounds, and Jordan's going to give you a player for significantly less than market value considering his age and what's on his resume. This seems like the one veteran contract that you should absolutely be highly interested in considering how well he's played this year, Brian.
Yeah, he's the one, and I'll ask you guys this question because I think I've got my thoughts. Him or Oso Odighizuwa? If you had to sign one, you can only get one.
I think Jordan's going to be a lot cheaper.
Yeah, I think Jordan Lewis will probably be more affordable. I would say, like, how many years will you be able to get out of Lewis compared to how many years you can get out of Osa just at their age right now, like Osa entering the prime.
But Osa, you're paying big money for pretty average production.
Yeah. If you're looking at, like, the money here, I'd go Jordan Lewis. He's going to be more affordable.
Player.
But just player, I think I'm going to be able to get more years out of a re-signing of Osa Odighizuwa than I am like maybe a year or two out of Jordan Lewis.
Okay, mock draft coming in. They're starting to come in pretty good now. Of course, Brian leads our number one draft coverage all the way up into draft night and beyond, really. It's a 24/7, 365 type of operation. But Sporting News and FanSided going with University of Missouri wide receiver Luther Burden III, an all-SEC wide receiver. A smaller guy, Brian, but a yak monster, apparently. Get the ball in his hands.
Yeah, Zach, you got some thoughts on him, too, you want to throw out there?
Yeah, I mean, he's a yak guy. He's an explosive dude. You get the ball in his hands, and you let him go make plays, basically. I mean, can return kicks and punts for you, but, I mean, he's a dude, screens. I think his season 2 years ago, maybe a little bit better than this year with Luther Burden. I might be in the minority on this. I think I'd lean Emeka Egbuka out of Ohio State over him. Okay,
I would, too.
All right, let's go.
I was going to ask you the question because – I know you probably don't know who was on the board of the wide receivers, but I think that I would go with the Ohio State kid myself. I think what's going to happen is Burton's a really, really good player, but what's going to happen is I think we're going to dig in and we're going to find some things there that we're going to probably have some concerns about.
Okay.
So with that being said, just kind of always in the first round looking for the safest guy, but both the players are super, super talented. Both run after catch, both catch, veteran type guys. I think that you're looking at a really, really quality player. Either way you go, but I'd take the Ohio State kid.
All righty, it is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. It is time now for the Eric Kendrick Show, brought to you by Keurig and Dr. Pepper. And a good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
What's up?
Man, we're in this like post holiday type of good vibe here, looking forward to the weekend and all that. How'd your holiday go?
It was solid. I feel like this time of year it's kind of especially around the holidays, kind of gets kind of weird. Sometimes we're able to celebrate, sometimes we need to be more locked in. So it's just it's that season, I guess. So I guess I really haven't had a real type of holiday. Since I was, before college.
Yeah. Maybe you get reacquainted with that in your post-playing days, but still plenty of football to be played for you, Eric. And, I was just wondering how you mentioned locked in. Once you're mathematically eliminated, how does that change with the approach? It's still, a big game coming up on Sunday. Everybody's got to be ready to go. How's that adjust the vibe when you're mathematically eliminated?
I mean, I feel like, the obvious is already known, so it's just about, representing yourself, representing your team, and putting some good film out there. But, everyone's still fighting for a job, essentially, so you better show up.
Eric Kendrick Show here with you on 105 Through the Fan. Well, we've had a great season chatting with you, so we did want to thank you for that. But I was wondering, how different did things go with this Cowboys organization compared to maybe your expectations coming in?
I feel like the thing that I've learned about, the NFL is you can't really, you got to just stay even, because you get too high on yourself, you get let down. You get too low on yourself, you might be surprised. So it's just kind of like you got to stay, flatline the whole time and just roll with the punches. Definitely, wasn't really what I kind of expected as far as, the season was going. Especially, competing against the Cowboys, for X amount of years. But in the same breath, I'm grateful to, just still be playing.
Hey, Erica, you know, Zim was on the podium the other day talking to the media, and he reflected on things that he might have should have done differently. And one of them was he was talking about that he should have done things earlier his way. And I hope I'm not putting you on the spot, but was it different really from what you've experienced with him before of how he was putting in his defense as opposed to where you guys are right now?
Yeah, you know, I feel like to a certain degree, I feel like, you know, he's coming in as the new guy, kind of essentially me as well.
Sure.
You know, you're not really trying to ruffle too many feathers, but at the same time, you know, you have a job to get done. I can kind of relate in that sense, but at the end of the day, I feel like, you know, he's done a great job, communicating and correcting. I feel like, you know, obviously, it's not what we all wanted. We all mm-hmm. strive for perfection. But at the end of the day, you know, I feel like the work was put in, and you can be proud about that. You know, not, you know, obviously it's disappointing in a sense. Like you said, there's things you wish you can change. It's always going to be the case. Mm-hmm. However, you know, I appreciate the work that was put in.
As you reflect on this season, you still got another game to play, but since this will be the last time we get to chat with you, is there anything that you would have changed, or what are you also most proud of from this 2024 Cowboys campaign?
You know, I feel like, I don't know. It's a good question. I guess I haven't really, you know, I'm still in the thick of it in my mind. Mm-hmm. I haven't really had a time to reflect on it. But, you know, I feel like, I don't know.
Did you ever feel like this defense was whole?
I feel like, that's a good question, too, because, you know, you're always going to have, like, injuries and things like along the way. And you know, you have to deal with the adversity, but I really feel like we started kind of humming and knowing more about our disguise and being more comfortable mm-hmm. communicating with each other. Mm-hmm. But that's going to be natural when you have a new type of situation. So, I really feel like we started really clicking and humming, and getting after it, maybe, you know, a little bit into the season, but at the same time, they felt good when we were doing that.
Generally, how do you approach the off season once the season ends? Do you get away from all things football? Do you take time away from even lifting weights? I know you're a monster in the weight room, but do you even just rest the body and relax? Yeah,
I feel like I never really relax. Essentially, you know, I'm still gonna do Pilates probably 3 times a week and yoga probably every so often per week. Like twice a week, and that's just like that's right away. I figured out early that, you know, as long as I move my body, you know, even if I'm taking the volume down, I'm not really, you know, pounding it. I'm not really in the weight room, but as long as I'm moving, when I get back to the weight room, when I get back to doing my functional movement stuff, when I get back to actual football, it makes it a lot easier to transition when I just keep moving my body, you know, nonstop. So I'm not gonna really stop, so to speak. You know, I'll take, you know, rests here and there, but I like to keep going.
Now, do you like to go to a yoga studio and do the hot yoga? Or are you doing it on you? How do you get down with yoga?
I usually do the hot yoga like twice a week, and then I do the Pilates in between those. So I just try to keep, you know, like I said, you know, as long as I'm moving, you know, probably five times a week, you know, treating my body right. I feel like it just benefits me so much, you know, more when I start, you know, put cleats on or when I get back in the weight room. I'm just so much, you know, in better shape. My body's way healthier, you know, because I feel like, you know, a lot of people just want to shut it down for X amount of weeks. And, you know, it's all about, I'm all about rest and recovery, but it's like, you can't, as a high performance athlete, you can't completely shut it down in my eyes.
Now I'm a yoga guy myself, usually just at the house though. But what's different about the Pilates?
The Pilates is like it's almost like rehab. So it's like, you know, we know how to like hit people and move linemen and bench press and squat, but you know, the correct movements are often overlooked, and Pilates really gets at the fundamental. So you can kind of fix things from a super basic fundamental standpoint, and then you just work your way up. So when you get back into the weight room, when you get back on the field, you're moving more functionally, more correct, versus doing the incorrect movements and the compensating movements. That's a good way to explain it, I guess.
It's the Eric Kendrick Show here with you on 105 through the Fan. Okay, so, you know, it's a big conversation coming up here in DFW sports radio land is going to be about the head coach. What do you think about the job Mike McCarthy did? They talk about the culture, the accountability, players like playing for him. What do you notice that would be memorable?
No, I feel like he does a lot of things to help the players, you know, in between the weeks and everything like that. You know, I feel like obviously it's hard to, you know, with the record, it's kind of, you know, everyone's jobs are up. So it's just like, you know, that's the obvious. However, you know, I feel like, you know, players have a lot of confidence in him for a reason. And, you know, I feel like he does a good job connecting with players. And, you know, every time I played against him, I played against him a lot. You know, it's been challenging.
Which coach that you've played for had the best pregame speeches?
The best pregame speeches of any coach that I've had. My linebacker coach in college, Jeff Ulbrich, he was a psycho. I feel like the best ones are just kind of like the non-serious psycho ones a little bit. You know, I feel like for the most part, everyone's going to say similar stuff. You know what I mean? I like to just laugh and like kind of, you know, I don't know.
Just appreciate the nut job in the middle of his
mind. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, it's just the outrageous things. But at the same time, you know, I never really feel like, you know, when a pregame, you never really know when a pregame speech is going to hit you. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm all about the speeches that hit at the right time. And, you know, we've had a lot of those this year.
Do you like being the pregame speech guy or no. speech? You try and just stay away from that?
No, I don't like being that guy. You know, to some degree, maybe I should be more type on that lines, but I like to, you know, I'm always communicating with everybody in the huddle, always, you know what I mean? And people are going to hear me every day, no matter what. That's just a guaranteed. So all the rah-rah pregame, I try to keep to a minimum because I feel like, I don't know. I want people to listen to me when I do have something to say, if it's real serious. But at the same time, I guess, you know, I don't know. We'll see.
So you're not a karaoke guy then, because you don't want to stand up there and sing, so you probably don't want to give a speech either, right?
Karaoke's a little different, you know. Okay. You get a couple sodas flowing, and, you know, you get a good group of friends, some oldies, some hits. You know, you got to grab the mic. You know, you can't be scared of the mic in karaoke.
There you go.
What's your go-to beverage there for some liquid courage?
I'm more of like a rum or like a, you know, a whiskey kind of guy. If I do drink, but you know, not a big drinker, and that's for sure.
Well, who would be in the hypothetical that you are doing some booze and maybe you're in a bit of a bar fight? Who's the Cowboy teammate from this year that you'd most want to have your back in that moment?
In a bar fight?
Yeah.
It's hard to, like, every time I'm presented with these questions, as long as LJ's on the team with me, it's like, it's hard to just not say Linval. I feel like he's such a presence.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try to find like a sleeper. I'll take Linval or Osa. I feel like the reason why I say Osa is because he was a championship wrestler in high school.
Bingo.
And a lot of people don't, you know, those are the guys you do not mess with at the bar.
Yeah.
You see a guy, if I'm at a bar and I see a guy with the cauliflower ear, you know, I swear on everything, I'll literally go up to him and be like, hey, if things go down, I'm on your team. And then I'll look at him and I'll be like, you got my back? And they usually just start, you know, they start laughing because they realize that I know that they're a fighter.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's wonderful, man. Well, who's the funniest teammate on the Cowboys this year?
Ooh, who's the funniest? A lot of funny guys. T. Wheat, he's my locker mate. He's hilarious. Who else? Brandon Cooks is funny to me.
Cookie.
Yeah,
he's a funny dude.
What about your favorite teammate to roast?
Favorite teammate to roast is Nick Vigil. he's once again locker mate. We just throw we just go at it all day. It's got to be with someone who can, you know, you got to give a little to get a little, you know.
Right.
But yeah.
Guy you'd most trust to babysit your kids.
Guy I most trust to babysit my kids. We got a lot of great fathers on the team. I don't know. I mean, we got some really, really, you know, in the linebacker room, Nick Vigil, Buddy, Demo, we got some good fathers. But who would I trust the most?
If your kids can't have ice cream, this player is likely to get the kids ice cream.
Sounds like who's the one you'd least like to watch?
No, because that's a lot of one. No, yeah, exactly. No, who's the least person I would like to have my kids? Yeah, that's a better question. Yeah, that's a better question. It's got to be a rookie. Like it's got to be like a
young buck, wild dog.
Who would just not? Who would just be?
You get to know Sam Williams at all?
Sam, no, yeah. Because I've seen Sam with his kids. He's good. He's good with that. So people who have kids, I'm not, not worried about them necessarily. It's the people who don't, who just have no idea.
No understanding of the responsibility.
Like Brev or something like that, like a rookie. Marist, Marist, I feel like Marist would be okay. But, yeah, I don't know.
Seems like he's going to be a real good player. What do you think?
He's a real good player. Very instinctual. Can't wait to have him even lean a little bit further into his instincts. We're seeing splashes of it. Very smart player. He cares. Obviously, that's important. And he's a force out there.
Well, you've been a force all year for us, Eric. I know the Jones boys have been talking, and maybe they're going to have a tightened-up belt here this off season. But if there's any way to have you around, we would absolutely love it as fans and as radio guys here. You've been an absolute blast to work with.
No, I appreciate that, guys. Let's see. Cheers. We'll see. Take it easy.
Yes, sir. There he goes. Man. The Eric Kendrick Show, brought to you by Keurig and Dr. Pepper. And, we shall see. He's been an absolute blessing. I couldn't imagine this linebacker room without him this year.
No, he's been great.
Okay, top 10 coming up next, then we'll check. The best buffets out there is next year on The Fan. Thank you very much, Lucius. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Time now for Woolchuck's top 10. Here he is, Zachary.
All right, let's do it. Best types of buffets, 877-881-1053. 903 is like Poncho's Mexican buffet. It's got to be number one. We got some love for the Chinese buffets. A couple of people just texted in their own favorite personal buffet. The Chinese buffet in Plano called King Buffet off 75 and Park is awesome.
King's good.
972 is good. Great wall. Also a good spot. Of course, we got to hit up the Bacchanal Buffet there in Vegas. That was delicious. That was a hell of an experience.
That was good.
But best types of buffet, according to America in the top 10s, 877-881-1053.
Well, there's 10 of them. Okay.
There's 10 of them. Number 10 is the breakfast buffet.
See, I was going to say that's number one, a.k.a. brunch.
Yeah.
You can mix in a dessert station. You got omelets happening.
Now, carving station.
Now you got a whole.
Yeah, you got ham slices. You got
omelet station.
Yeah. The breakfast buffet is fantastic. It really is.
Brunch. He's right. Brunch is really, really good though.
Nine is the seafood buffet.
Yeah.
All seafood.
Yeah.
Which, hey, if you're allergic, I get it. But otherwise, sign me up for a seafood buffet.
That one in Vegas was really good.
The shrimp, the crab, the lobster, all of it. Number eight. This is just going to be an all meat buffet.
There you go.
I knew you'd be in on that one.
Yeah,
just the meats.
Yeah, one of those the gaucho style or whatever, when they're just
Fogo de Chao.
Yeah, they're just bringing Texas Day Brazil, something like that.
Oh yeah,
how can you really beat that?
You could fill up on that salad bar thing they have over there with the charcuterie boards.
They get you with that salad bar.
Yeah,
seven is the pizza buffet.
Oh geez,
yeah, it's a good time, man. Cece's was the move, bro.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, we had this spot up in the Northwest called Izzy's.
Ooh,
and
sounds good.
And they had incredible pizza. It was almost criminal that you could get in there for like $9. And they did. They had the cinnamon rolls and the breadsticks,
Mr.
and the fried
like
chicken
that.
And the barbecued chicken. It was incredible.
Six is the dessert buffet. Just all the delicious desserts.
Is there a place that is a dessert only buffet, or is this just the section of the run of the mill buffet that you can also obviously get some dessert as well?
Felt like my mom's kitchen there over the holidays was a damn dessert buffet.
We might be on
was it, dude?
Killed it.
You're putting up pie numbers.
Sugar
like crazy.
Cookies, chocolate chip cookies, at least a pie and a half myself.
Oh, the sugar cream?
We're talking like two pieces a day with a scoop of vanilla ice cream.
Oh,
it
wow.
Was like, it was a cheat 10 days.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Every day. That's how you vacation right
that
there.
That is a holiday. Yeah, I don't know if there's any like dessert only buffets, but if there's not, maybe we can do something with that.
Yeah, like
that's a good idea.
Good business idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number five is the Italian buffet. And I'd be in on that. An Italian buffet is where it's at.
That's the ultimate itis, though, I think. I mean, you're just carb loading your balls off.
You are. It's just pasta and different breads. It's fried. And, you know, it's like stuffed shells. Four is the Mexican buffet. So there you go, Ponchos. Ponchos. Not number one. Yeah. But it's number four.
Ponchos.
Three better, huh?
Three is your Japanese or sushi buffets.
Yep.
And I'm definitely going to put that
Tokyo
up there.
Tokyo one,
me.
Those kind of people, Sam.
Two is the Chinese buffet.
Wow.
But number one, and I'm surprised it was number one, it's the Indian buffet.
I've never been.
Oh. And I'll tell you what, the Indian buffet, I mean, I'm married to somebody whose favorite food is butter chicken. I mean, Indian food is like her passion. I eat it probably once a week.
Chicken
now.
Tikka masala?
Chicken tikka masala, chicken korma, the biryani, you name it, we're in
I
on
love
it.
All that
I've
stuff.
I've started making it. Since you talked about it, I started making the butter chicken. Unbelievable.
It's fantastic. It's done so much cream and butter, but it is absolutely phenomenal. There's your top 10 best
Thank
buffets.
You, Zach. Nice job. Okay, coming up next, in addition to the finest, where are you going?
The football world welcomes Belichick to the Gram, and we got some stats of the day for you next year in the nation.